Thank you, Rick. Are you ready for a good old good one today?
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, this will be nice here. We got 2 hours of a topic that has sparked a controversy here and is getting national attention. And we got the man right here in the studio who started it all. But before we get into that, I want to say, hey, Ma, how you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, how are you?
Good, good. So you're here again to sign. You know, we want to announce a new thing. We're giving the books away for free, right? We're giving.
However.
But you got to pay. You got to pay for the bumper stickers, right?
Right.
So we're so excited. It only took us 21 and a half years to figure out that we should have a serious KSCO AM 1080 bumper sticker drive. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that occurs to radio stations, like, you know, immediately, even before they go on the air. But better late than never, right? We
right.
are so proud of our new bumper stickers that say, listen and be heard, AM 1080 KSCO. They're white. They're very tasteful. They're something that will that no one would be concerned about, you know, mucking up their car by sticking the bumper sticker on. It'll really add to the class of your vehicle. And we're selling those here, but we're giving away a book, and it's a much better.
You want them to donate money for a book.
Okay. Well, donate money for a bumper sticker and then get a free book.
Oh,
that you will inscribe, right?
Well, I will indeed, and I look forward to having nice conversations with some of the people that come.
And of course, the more people that come, the less you'll be able to listen to the program today. But it's okay because you'll be able to hear the rerun tonight from
right.
10 to midnight.
Right.
And anytime on podcast, you know, on demand worldwide at KSCO.com, 2 or 3 hours after
really
it's posted.
I'm looking forward to this topic, too.
Okay. Well, this will be great here. Let's start the program officially. No, 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 not that way. This way. This
Good
way.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
You haven't even invited phone calls and already the phones are ringing. Welcome, Monterey Bay, Silicon Valley, and KSCO Land and World via KSCO.com. To your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO, the last independent radio voice left in America. We're going to be on the air right up until 12 noon discussing a really novel idea. And we hope you will join us. And in fact, come on down to 2300 Portola and meet Kay.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
I have a neighbor at KSCO North who is a medical doctor, a cardiologist, and a member of the Richmond City Council. Jeff Ritterman has come up with a novel way to promote healthy eating and active living in his community. He proposes a soda tax which would raise about $3 million for school sports and nutrition programs, and the council has voted to put this on the November ballot for voter approval. Now, normally I'm allergic to and opposed to additional taxes to make it even harder for all of us, but because sugar is one of the most toxic substances known to mankind that causes so much illness, misery, and death to our population, this is one tax I can wholeheartedly support. The drug companies love sugar because it causes diseases that help them sell more of their poisons, which lead to more diseases, which require more prescription poisons, drugs. The government loves sugar because it causes people to die sooner so they won't have to pay us back our own Social Security money. Since most Americans have no self-control whatsoever, don't ban sugar, just make it so expensive that people will think twice before they poison themselves. Join Dr. Jeff Ritterman, pharmacist Ben Fuchs, and me on the KSCO Poison Special this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on Wake Up, You're Being Had, Big Time Radio, AM 1080 KSCO.
I'm so pleased to welcome Jeff Ritterman to KSCO Studios. He took a long drive this morning from the Bay Area to come to the studio. He could have done it on the telephone. He said, you know, I'd like to drive on down. So welcome, Jeff.
Great to be here.
And yeah, let's see. I also want to welcome our good friend, Pharmacist Ben. Are you there, Pharmacist Ben?
Hey, MZ.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
All right. Now, you're in Denver or are you in Boulder? I keep forgetting. Sometimes you're in Denver, sometimes.
Both. I got a foot in both areas. Right now I'm in Denver, though.
Okay.
My heart's in Boulder, though. My body's in Denver. My heart is in Boulder.
So why isn't your body in Boulder if your heart's there?
Boulder's a little slow moving for this this hyperactive ADD pharmacist.
Right.
It's a little bit sleepy.
I think most of the KSCO Saturday Special audience is familiar with Pharmacist Ben, but in case you're not, because we have hundreds of thousands of new people, having joined us in the last 7-8 months now, because of the meltdown of KGO in San Francisco, and they gave my good friends at Cumulus Media, gave people a reason to move off 810 and discover 1080. So we got a whole bunch of new people who might not be familiar with you, Ben. You and I have been friends, and you have a nationally syndicated radio program called The Bright Side that's carried on a number of radio stations and worldwide via the internet. And you are a nutritional pharmacist based in Boulder, Colorado. And unlike most pharmacists, you say use prescription drugs as a last resort, not a first resort.
Yeah. As a very, very last resort. I coined the term nutritional pharmacy. There's nothing like a nutritional pharmacist in pharmacy school and in the world of pharmacy. But in the way I look at it is nutrients are the best medicines, and diseases are oftentimes the manifestation of nutritional deficiencies. So if we're really interested in helping work with the body and recalibrate the body's biochemistry, you want to use nutrients, not prescription drugs. There's no prescription drug on the planet that is going to make you better. At best, they'll change your test scores. They'll change your test markers, which, interestingly enough, are set by the drug companies who are selling the drugs. That's a whole other story. At best, prescription drugs can just recalibrate test scores and test markers. They're not going to do anything.
Hey,
for your
Ben, you're on a roll. It's cutting out terribly. Yeah, we've got a bad connection on the access. So I'm afraid would you mind calling us back on 831-479-1080? And that way, we want to make sure that people can understand everything you say. Technology, you know, sometimes it doesn't work. There goes Ben Fuchs. He'll be back with us in just a second. Okay, Dr. Jeff, you and I have been acquainted as neighbors for a few years now, and a while back you decided, and you were, I guess you've recently retired from cardiology.
That's right. Yeah, I was chief of cardiology at Kaiser Richmond for most of the last 30 years or so. I came there 1981, and I left about 2 years ago, and I'm just about finishing my fourth year on city council.
Ah, okay. And what was it that made you decide to run for council when you were still active as a medical doctor?
Well, I had this idea, and I still have this idea, that in the exam room you can help people in Richmond get better one by one and try to improve the health that way. But if you really can craft social policy or programs, you can lift the entire health of a community, and that's really what we're trying to do with the soda tax.
Ah, okay. So this has been on your mind for some time now. It's taken like 4 years to get some traction. Is that what's going on here?
Well, the soda tax specifically, I've been working on for the last 4 years, but the idea of the overlap of health and social policy is what brought me to Richmond 30 years ago, because I really wanted to work in a community where the pressures of disadvantaged life were so clearly getting under the skin and causing premature illness and death. And one of the ways that happens is with the diets that we eat. And I didn't really understand that nearly as much as I do now. And what I've learned is that just the huge amounts of sugar in our diet are really causing a whole cluster of illnesses that pretty much encompass all of the chronic illnesses that kill us, that being diabetes, premature heart disease, which means heart attacks, strokes, and cancer. That whole cluster is hypertension as well, of course, obesity and overweight is in the cluster, are all affected by excess fructose. And when you have a sweetened beverage, a sugar-sweetened beverage, you're actually just taking liquid sugar, and it's going right from the small intestine to the liver. And here I was, a doctor, 30 years, I didn't know that fructose is only metabolized in the liver. I learned that after I retired. I would bet that a lot of doctors don't know that. But this huge amount of fructose goes to the liver. And by the way, it's not just high fructose corn syrup. When you take table sugar, which is sucrose, half of the sucrose molecule is fructose. So it's basically any of the stuff that's sweet that's not stevia or an artificial sweetener. Fructose, honey, maple syrup, all of that.
Anything that has O's in it.
Well, lactose in milk is a much less sweet and much less of a problem. And really it's fine to drink whole milk, and we're not taxing that. But all of these others, which just put lots of sugar in, basically overwhelm the liver with a sugar load. The liver has never seen this in its history. By that I mean its evolutionary history. The liver that you have and that I have is the liver of the hunter-gatherer. And all of it, and they never had fructose in this or any sugars in these sort of doses. And what the liver does with it is it turns it into fat. But it's not the fat around your waistline or my waistline that's the problem. That's just the fat we see. It also makes fat which packs the liver. And that's going to cause liver problems in the future. It ultimately produces diabetes. And it ultimately packs the arteries of the heart with fats which cause the heart attacks. And there's a cancer connection as well. So all of a sudden, we have a product which we grew up thinking was innocuous, could be part of a balanced diet, and all of a sudden the science is saying one a day and your risk of a heart attack goes up by 20%. Really? Well, then I don't need one a day, and I got to tell my children and all of Richmond's children this story too, and that's why we're here.
Okay, now you say you moved to Richmond 30 years ago. But didn't think about getting into politics until, you know, 26 years later.
Well, I've always been into politics. I mean, when I was in college, I was in Students for Democratic Society. I always conceived of my medical work as political. I brought medical supplies to Salvadoran refugees in the 80s. I brought medical supplies to the African National Congress in South Africa in the 80s. So I've always had a political dimension to it, but it's recently really that I've begun to focus the health politics on the city of Richmond and to really try to do that intensively.
And it could have been any city, right? A city that has problems, right? Economic problems and so forth, or was it Richmond specifically? Do you think this works best in Richmond or will work best and be a model for the rest of the country?
It'll be a model for the rest of the country. It could have been any city, but I fell in love with Richmond, and Richmond has a uniqueness. I actually moved to Richmond. I used to live in Oakland, but I always had the job in Richmond. And I just fell in love with Richmond because of the people in Richmond and so much want to help the community achieve much better health than it has. And it's a community that deserves better than it's getting. And it's a community that is poised to really make a quantum leap in terms of economic activity. We just got Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, second campus. And now we're going to make a quantum leap in health. And this kind of publicity we're getting is also bringing in the right kinds of businesses. Nutiva just moved to Richmond, an organic food company, and we're inviting others to come. We have Exoskeleton in our health cluster. It's going to revolutionize the care of stroke victims. We have Harvard Bioscience in our health cluster. They made a trachea out of a polymer and cell culture and put it in somebody, and it works. So these are going to be pioneering companies for the future. And we've done the same in green tech and clean tech. And because of the attention, I'm working with two big companies to try to interest them in coming to Richmond as well. And I can't really mention that over the air. But this is really the direction that we need to go, and it's the direction the state and the country needs to go. It's ridiculous to think that you can produce a product, manufacture it, put in all that energy, all those resources, cart it around the globe, sell it to everybody, and at the end of the day, that product is making people sick. That's a mistake. There's got to be a better way. You got to make a product that makes people healthy, or don't make the product.
It's starting to get some traction, starting to catch on. 2 weeks ago, two Sundays ago, I'm sure you know about the 60 Minutes lead story, right?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, and a big study. I forget who did it, but the we all knew that. I grew up knowing that sugar, too much sugar is bad. It causes cavities and sugar diabetes and all that kind of stuff. But I had no idea it's really as evil as it is. I mean, it's worse than friggin' heroin.
It actually, that's an interesting example because it has the addiction potential of heroin and cocaine. Actually, mice that are addicted to cocaine will prefer sugar water over cocaine water when they're given the choice. So, and it lights up the same parts in our brain as addictive substances. And it's also driving our insulin levels up and keeping them up. When your insulin level is up, the hormone that breaks down your fat cells, hormone-sensitive lipase, can't work. So you have the paradox of an overweight person walking down the street not able to mobilize their fat fuel because their insulin levels are high. So they're actually starving, and they're going to eat, you know, more fructose as a result and continue the problem. So it's a totally insidious problem biologically.
Pharmacist Ben Fuchs is back here. Let's bring him on the telephone. Ben, you heard all that, yeah?
Yeah, it's so many things. Awesome, doctor. I'm glad to hear you saying all of these things. By the way, I want to correct one slight error that you mentioned in the beginning, MZ. Sugar is not a poison in the sense that it's not handled by the body's poison control system. The body has a wonderful way of breaking down and metabolizing poisons and preparing them for excretion. Sugar doesn't activate the poison control system. So sugar is not per se a poison. The big problem with sugar is it's explosive stuff. I mean, sugar dust is a known explosive hazard in sugar factories, and grain dust is a known explosive factor in grain silos. And the big problem with sugar is that the body has to control its explosive nature. At any given moment, you have about a teaspoon of sugar in your blood, and that if you're healthy, and that teaspoon of sugar, that amount has to be held very, very, very tightly. When you swamp the blood with 12 teaspoons, 14 teaspoons, 16 teaspoons of sugar, which is the amount of sugar you're getting when you drink a Coke or you eat a Hostess Twinkies or the kind of foods that we're eating, the body's homeostatic balancing mechanisms have to kick in, and this is where the problem comes in. Over time, the body stops listening to the homeostatic chemistry, and that's called resistance. And what the doctor was alluding to is really the biggest problem, or one of the biggest problems with sugar, and that is that the balancing systems, the homeostatic systems, which involve insulin, sort of dumb down. They stop listening to insulin. Now, insulin does a lot of things. In addition to being a sugar metabolizing or a sugar handling hormone, it's a growth hormone. And this is a huge, huge problem, because as the body stops listening to insulin's sugar metabolizing properties, it doesn't stop listening to insulin's growth growth properties, and cells continuously divide the more insulin it's being cranked
like
out
cancer.
Of your pancreas.
Years ago, Ben, I heard you say, cancers are sugar feeders. And that's stuck,
well, yeah.
It's stuck in my brain. It's stuck
well,
in my
brain. Well, that's a whole other story. A cancer cell is a cell that has learned how to utilize sugar. Because it's not having to getting enough oxygen. That's a whole other story. But yes, sugar cancer cells are sugar feeders. That's another topic. What I'm talking about is this thing called insulin resistance, where the body stops listening to insulin sugar metabolizing roles, but it continuously listens to insulin's growth stimulating properties. So it's not your sugar is not being controlled by the insulin, but insulin is still stimulating growth. And when insulin stimulates growth, for example, of cells inside blood vessels, you can end up with high blood pressure. When insulin stimulates the growth of skin cells, you can end up with skin tags. When insulin continuously promotes cell division, you can ultimately end up with cancers as well. So this problem of insulin resistance is really one of the biggest and most misunderstood issues when it comes to sugar, and that's in addition to sugar's very explosive, high-energy nature. The last thing I want to say about sugar is this the idea that sugar has a sticky quality, and it can stick to proteins. We observe this when we put eggs on top of bread. The protein in the eggs sticks to the sugar in the bread, and you end up with a nice browning effect on top of your bread. Same thing with honey-baked hams, where they put honey on top of hams. The reaction between sugar and protein is technically called glycation. And this glycation effect is a very, very significant factor when it comes to some of the long-term effects of sugar, like blindness and amputation, because of the effects of sugar on the proteins in small blood vessels in your eyes and small blood vessels in your extremities. So between glycation and insulin resistance and the high-energy nature of sugar, that's where you really have the problems with excess ingestion of sugar. It's not so much that it's a poison as much as it changes the body's chemistry.
All right. Well, I have been in the 48 hours since we've been running that promo for this program. I have been subjected personally to some abuse. I shouldn't say it abuse. People have said, "Hey, MZ, I'm surprised at you. You know, you've always been, you know, keep the government out of your face type person." He says, "Not the government. We're talking about Jeff is." I'm not sure whether the city council in Richmond or any place else in California, Jeff, has the power to start a tax without the people because of Prop 13. I mean, don't you?
That's right. So this is five out of seven of us support it, and it will go up for a majority vote on November 6th.
Of the people.
Of the people who live in Richmond.
Right.
If it passes, then it'll go into effect January. And there's another city in California, El Monte, that's doing the same thing. It was tried on the statewide level by Bill Monning, assemblyman from, I think, your district here.
Uh-huh.
Who's actually a personal friend of mine and just a wonderful person and knows a lot about health. His wife's a doctor as well. And, you know, on the state level, you needed the 2/3. Otherwise, we'd probably already have it on the state, and it wouldn't be an issue. We'd be doing it everywhere. And I just want to say I really loved what the pharmacist said and bringing in the advanced glycation products and all of that, which is exactly how our proteins get glopped up. And this is all exactly related to this high sugar load, and the insulin resistance is at the heart of it all. The reason we are focusing on the sugar sweetened beverages is because they're the worst. Because the liquid sugar goes right from the small intestine to the liver, and it's what we have the best data on. And unpublished data, I can tell you that, you can take a healthy adult and give him sugar sweetened beverages, and you can demonstrate, fat, deposition in the liver within a week. So our kids with these big gulps and all that, their livers are getting fatty. They're getting the insulin resistance. They're going to get the diabetes. They're going to have the small dense LDL particles, the bad cholesterol produced by the liver and block up their coronaries, and they're going to lose years of life. That's really what's at stake. a third of the African American and a third of the Latino fifth and seventh graders in Richmond are obese right now. Another 20% in each group are overweight. Those kids are going to die young unless we have a successful intervention. And the successful intervention that's been proposed by the head of the CDC, American Heart, American Medical Association, AARP, Institute of Medicine, UN, you name it, American Academy of Pediatrics, the group your child's doctor belongs to, is the 1 cent per ounce sugar-sweetened beverage tax. We're going to collect $3 million in Richmond for $86,000. We can teach every third grader in Richmond how to swim. So there are a lot of good things we can do with this money. We need the help of your listeners. We're getting outspent 35 to 1. We need people to go to their web and go look up www.fit-for-life.org or just put into Google Richmond Fit for Life and donate. No contribution is too small. Give up a soda. Donate you $2 from your soda. And no contribution is too large. They are lying now in Richmond. Big Soda is going around saying they're going to tax milk. They're going to tax fruit juices. And they know it's not true. And they're calling people on the phone and saying that. And they're doing it because they know that when the domino falls in Richmond, it's going to happen everywhere. It's going to just be like cigarette tax. And I predict one day you're going to pick up your can of cola, and on the side of the can of cola is going to say, caution, if you drink one of these a day, you're going to get diabetes or have a heart attack prematurely.
Wow. I think that should be yesterday.
I think that's going to happen. I think it is today's public health menace. And if you think about it, everything we're dying of, heart attack, stroke, cancer, in great numbers, it has a connection to insulin resistance and too much sugar. All of those illnesses. That's a lot of death.
Yeah.
And a lot of medical care costs.
And so I want to ask each of you, do you think I was too harsh or too inflammatory in my description of sugar in the promo? What do you think, Ben?
Well, I don't want people to think that sugar is a poison. I want people to understand that you need to have a certain amount of sugar. But what you want to be careful of is swamping, overloading the body's sugar handling system. And largely, by the way, the reason we eat so much sugar is because of the fact that the body is a homeostatic balancing system, and we need more and more sweet to get that sweet taste. Have you ever laid off a sugar for 2 or 3 days and then tried to eat something that you ordinarily could eat, some kind of sweet thing that you ordinarily could eat? You'll notice that it's too sweet.
Yeah.
Because after 2 or 3 days,
that's true.
You reset your body's sweet sensitivity. See, the body's always balancing things out. Highs are always getting pulled down to normal, and lows are always getting pulled up to normal. And it's this homeostatic balancing system that you want to be careful of. It's not so much that sugar is a poison, and that's why maybe your promo is a little bit harsh.
From the word poison more than anything.
Yes. Right?
What do you think, Jeff? Do you think it was too harsh?
Well, here's the problem. We are hijacking the biology, so I don't think it's too harsh. It's not a poison in the acute sense like alcohol is, but it is toxic in the long-term sense and in the dosages that we're commonly taking it in. What we're forgetting is that we never in our evolutionary history confronted huge doses of sugar in our diet, except, you know, when we were lucky enough maybe to, you know, get the honey from a beehive. But basically, if you look in nature, sugar is pretty much always bound to fiber, which slows its ingestion. And let's face it, how many apples can you eat? I mean, 3, 6, 9, a dozen. I mean, think of how much apple sugar is concentrated in your apple cider. It's not from one apple, right?
Yeah.
So in nature, and the way we evolved to eat in nature. Eat a sugar cane out of nature. It's all full of fiber. You cannot eat it.
And even more fundamentally, Doc, sugar cane and natural fruits have the vitamins and nutrients that are necessary for metabolizing the sugar. For example, chromium, vanadium, which are two minerals that are very important for sugar metabolism, they're not found in very many, they're pretty hard to find in nature, but the sugar cane and the sugar beet are two of nature's richest sources in these very valuable minerals. And one more thing, you know, when we talk about fruits, a lot of people have this warm, fuzzy feeling about fruits, and that's all well and good because fruits have some good nutrients in them. But today's apples are not the same apples that we were eating 1,000 years ago. If you ever see a crab apple, that's what an apple is supposed to look like. Over the course of millennia, we have learned how to genetically modify fruits to make them super sweet. So when we're eating an apple today, this is not what the body is used to expecting. And I'm glad the doctor brought out this whole idea of evolutionary biology.
Every crab apple that I've ever eaten at a restaurant is pickled. Not pickled, that's the wrong word. Is extra sweetened and dyed with red. So I've never eaten a crab apple, you know, just off the tree. And presumably what you're saying, Ben, is that a crab apple off a tree, when it's fully ripe, is not nearly as sweet.
No,
as the crab apple that you see sliced in a red dye, you know, at the restaurant.
What he's saying is that even the natural ones, we have produced giant sweet fruits, which is never how they occurred in nature, and our bodies did not grow up with these fruits.
And that's the point that we really want to understand, is our bodies grew up with a certain kind of biochemistry and expecting certain kinds of chemical substances to come in. Over the last 1,000 years, and really dramatically in the last 100 or 200 years, as we've begun to understand organic chemistry and began to manipulate organic chemistry, we have completely changed what the body is, the kind of substances that have entered into the body, and our body really has no idea what to do with it. Now, the human body can over time evolve, but not in 100 years and not in 200 years. And so what we've done is we've broken the code. We have a certain code that we're supposed to be following when it comes to the kind of foods that we're ingesting, and we have violated that. And we're paying the price with fatty liver disease, we're paying the price with diabetes, we're paying the price with metabolic syndrome, and we're paying the price by dying from diseases of degeneration that should not be happening.
I want you to be my pharmacist. I'm learning a lot from you. This is great.
Great. You're listening to the KSCO Saturday Special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. Rick O'Shea is the pilot in command. MZ, me, I'm the host. Dr. Jeff Ritterman, retired cardiologist, current city council person, who has made waves, national waves, with his proposal that the city of Richmond, or he is part of the city council there, adopt, and this requires voter approval in November, a soda tax. It's not really a sugar tax; it's a soda tax. But is it? Or tell us what.
Well, what it is a tax on sugar sweetened beverages. So we are not recommending fruit juices, but we are not taxing them for two reasons. One, the data on them is not really as compelling because they haven't been studied as much as the data for sugar-sweetened beverages like sodas. And two, to be honest and frank, I don't think the public is ready for it. But the alternative we are pushing is tap water. I mean, in Richmond, we have water from the Sierras. And think about it.
It's delicious. I love the water that comes from my tap.
And what can you – I mean, you can say to somebody – the alternative will make you richer, will make you thinner, will make you healthier, will help save the planet, and the infrastructure pretty much already exists. Guess what? Just turn on your tap. So that's really the direction we want to go. But back to your question about the specifics of the tax. We were hampered by the fact that the State Franchise Tax Board was not going to cooperate with us, so it had to be something that the municipality could do entirely by its own. So we consulted with probably the best legal team in the state, and the one with the most experience, and they came up with a business license fee. So a business will have to pay the fee, and whether they will pass it on to the consumers will be up to them. We're now working on a plan on how we can make it easy for a business. It's basically you just go through your inventory of what you sold last year, and for every sugar sweetened beverage, which would also include things like Gatorade besides all the sodas, but as I say, it wouldn't include 100% natural fruit juice. But if it was a fruit juice, sugar sweetened beverage, you know, kind of thing like Capri Suns or all these things that are on the market, that's just, you know, a sugar sweetened beverage, and that would be taxed. And it would be 1 cent per ounce. We would bring in about $3 million is what the best estimate is. Our plan is to use it for after-school sports, for school-based nutrition programs, and to help with health care and those who can't afford it. I just priced out that swimming lessons, as I mentioned, for all of our third graders. Teach every third grader in Richmond how to swim for $86,000. That doesn't include transportation yet, so we're working on that. But imagine that the likelihood of a Latino child or an African-American child being water safe and a swimmer if their parents are not swimmers is 10%. So we can change that with this tax. Pass this tax, we can make our children water safe forevermore. So we can do a lot of good things. And even just the conversation in Richmond has changed people's behavior. At our, we had an event for U.S. Tennis Association. The head of the Parks and Rec Commission leader came running over to me, gave me a big hug, said, "You'll be so proud of us. No sugar sweetened beverages, just flavored tap water." And she, at that time, was not for the tax. So it just shows you that the whole conversation has been changing. I'm going to be meeting with the mayor of a very large metropolitan city on the East Coast later this month, who's a supporter, to see if I can get him to commit nationally. There's a lot happening. We were in the Wall Street Journal this week. We were in Fox News. This is a we're just on the front of the wave, but this is a wave that's going to sweep the country. And I predict that just like everybody accepts cigarette taxes now, in a couple of years, everybody is going to be on board with sugar-sweetened beverage
tax. excuse me. It's very rude to clear one's throat on the air, right? So,
it's your station.
You don't get there's a promo that's been running for years where I said that some years ago. Anyhow, we want to. I forgot what I was going to say. Dang it! All right, we're going to go to a commercial break. Then we're gonna have callers. But before we go to the commercial break, and I want to turn it to a political discussion about. You know, I'm all for this tax here. I mean, because of what it is. Like, I'm all for taxes that are bad on things that are bad for you. I'm not necessarily. I mean, I'm not. Jeez, I don't know. I've never. I don't think cancerettes should be outlawed, but I wouldn't care if they quadrupled the taxes on them, or you know, or 10 times the tax on them because they're bad. You know.
Well, I think there's a couple of principles. First, the product has to be shown to do harm. That we've already shown. Second, the cost has to be socialized. We all have to be paying part of the cost. That's being shown because the medical costs are socialized. But there's a lot of other costs. I mean, in a city like Richmond, if in the future 42% of our adults are obese, which is what's going to happen if we do nothing, those are people.
Well, wait a minute. What is it now? What percentage of are obese in Richmond
now? In the
30s. Okay.
So what's going to happen is people with chronic illness do not volunteer to teach Sunday school or coach the Little League. They need help themselves. And so the healthier a city, the more vibrant it is. Cities that have a lot of illness start to collapse on themselves because the needs overwhelm the assets. We need to go the other way. Our assets need to overwhelm our needs. We need to take care of our vulnerable, but we need to give everyone the chance for as long and as healthy a life as possible. We can do that.
Ben, Pharmacist Ben Fuchs, if you were a voter in the city of Richmond and you were asked to vote on the tax that Jeff described, what would your vote be?
You know, if you have to have taxes, then this is probably the best way to do it. But I don't think, I don't like the idea of having the government or having taxation induce people to do things that are in their best interest. Why are we, why do we have to be forced to do things that are in our best interest? Why can't we figure out a way to handle our lives in a way that will be conducive to good health?
I agree with that for sure.
There's this paternalism. There's this idea that government can handle personal issues that I have a real basic problem with.
But we're not talking about the city council passing this tax. We're talking about the people in the city of Richmond voting to assess this tax on themselves. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I just want to say, I think there's two things. One is the history of public health shows that human beings are by nature stubborn. So cigarette taxes were really terrific in decreasing the number of smokers and in decreasing the number of new smokers. And every public health campaign, whether it be seat belts, helmets, drunken driving, has always required a little bit of a stick with the carrot. When there's an overwhelming prohibition, like prohibition of alcohol, people don't like that. You never want to ban anything. You never want to tell people absolutely no. But you want to remind them that there is a societal penalty here. And you want to use that revenue, just like in cigarettes.
Now, I'm sure people have been asking you what safeguards are there that the revenue will indeed be used that way and not for salaries and, you know, pensions and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's what the other side's saying. So I've had everybody who is on the city council who approves, that's five of us, and we have quite a few of those running, have signed a pledge, pledging that they'll do just that. And we're going to have a press conference with the five of us who are on the council now to unveil the plan to teach the children how to swim. And we'll all go on record as saying as soon as this passes in November, before I leave council, we will commit to this swimming program. And we'll do that with a few things so that the people will know we're serious. There's no interest in anyone on the council subverting this. Everybody cares deeply about the children of Richmond, and everybody understands that their political career is on their line if they stab the electorate in the back. So that's just not going to happen. When we had an advisory vote asking what people wanted us to do on the casino, and they said no, we voted out the casino. So the only people who are claiming that the money's going to be wasted is coming from Big Soda. That is their line, and that's what they're putting out. But nobody on the council is gonna do that. But I just want to take up this question of the tax and paternalism and so on a little bit further. I didn't know for 30 years as a cardiologist that the amount of fructose in a sugar-sweetened beverage was going to put fat in my liver and block up my coronary arteries. Most kids' parents don't know that. This is getting everybody's attention. Nobody has to pay the tax. Nobody has to drink these things. Everybody can drink tap water. It's better for everybody. There is no benefit to this product, just like there's no benefit to cigarettes. It's just that people haven't understood that analogy. But when people understand that these are harmful products, everyone will accept the tax, because we've done that with cigarettes. Just like everybody said, oh, the economy is going to go under if you can't smoke in a bar or a restaurant. Those restaurants made more money because more people came out to be in them. We're going to turn the tide on this as well.
Well, here's a slight difference between the cigarette tax and the soda tax, and that is that people can, it's a lot more difficult to make your own cigarettes. People, if they're paying too much money for soda pop, they're going to make their own Kool-Aid. So you're really not going to, I don't think you're going to have the same kind of impact on sugar intake with a tax that you are, that you had with cigarettes, simply because people will shift their attention towards making their own sweet drinks. On the other hand, if we can figure out a way, see, here's the thing. I would present one of the reasons, or two of the main reasons, actually, why we're eating so much sugar is, number one, because we are nutritionally deficient, and so we are in a chronic state of low energy. And this chronic state of low energy is very simple to alleviate by just drinking sugar. So number one, I would present that deficiencies, especially in protein, by the way, and in essential fatty acids and in micronutrients, is behind much of our excess sugar ingestion, number one. And number two, almost as significantly, I would present that emotional and even spiritual and mental crisis is behind much sugar ingestion. Because when we eat sugar, we get a cocaine-like rush. We feel good about ourselves temporarily. Of course, then we crash, then we have more sugar. But the point is that until we resolve our mental issues, our emotional issues, and our physical nutritional deficiency issues, I suspect that attacks will not be successful.
Well, I agree with the last two-thirds of what you said, but the data doesn't support what you're saying about consumption. The American Beverage Association's own data from surveys in Richmond predict that a 1 cent per ounce sugar-sweetened beverage tax will decrease consumption between 15 and 24%, which is the highest I've
seen.
Pardon me?
Consumption of sugar overall or consumption of soft drinks?
Consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages. But the sugar-sweetened beverages don't translate into eating more donuts. It translates into beverage choices. Because as we know, those calories are not registered in any way. And they're the biggest increase. I agree with everything else you say about motivation, about the spiritual problem, about the being driven by a real need for easily processed carbohydrate calories, and that's why people eat donuts and bread and pizza and all that as well in the diet. I think there has to be a fundamental shift in the diet. I agree with all that. But there's very strong data that sugar-sweetened beverage tax of 1 cent per ounce decreases consumption, and just about everybody who's looked at that computer models has found that. But I think we're going to do better than that anyway, just because of what we're talking about and how we're talking about it and the nutrition information we're going to couple with it. Because this is a real – I'm not on this show without this tax, and I'm not on the Wall Street Journal, and I'm not on Fox News and any of those things. Everybody's attention is on us because of this tax, and that's part of the ability to get the message through. So I think the data is overwhelmingly in our favor. I don't think people will just switch to Kool-Aid. But I think you've hit on exactly the problem. It's a much more fundamental and deep problem that is our relationship to healthy eating and healthy beverage choices and how we grow it.
And that's what the money will be earmarked for, or is earmarked for.
Right? Well, we can't earmark it. We can't say that because we'll get a lawsuit. Oh. So we have to say that it's advised for that. But the city council can take a position and say, if it passes, we will do this. And the first one we'll do will be the swim stuff. But it's not going to only be swim lessons. It's going to be soccer and track and field and any sport a kid wants to play after school in Richmond. We're going to help defray the cost. But we're also going to put in nutrition programs in the school because there has to be a healthy eating component. It's not just about exercise. You know, a lumberjack eats 4,500 calories a day, a tailor 2,500.
That part sounds great. And the only thing, you know, I guess you said that you've already been to the franchise tax board and they turned a cold shoulder on you for whatever reason. We can go into that maybe later on. So I guess the one thing that I might have a problem in, I do support the tax. I'm not sure I support the way that it's proposed, punishing business owners again, you know, just making it that much more difficult for business owners to be in business. So what is the deal with the franchise tax board? Why couldn't they, or Board of Equalization or somebody, why couldn't they be of more, so that you don't have to put it on the shoulders of the business people, you know, who already have enough?
They could. I think eventually it'll all move in that direction. There's just a lot of resistance, and let's face it, the group
got to get the concept, you know, well, accepted first.
I mean, come on, the group that we're going up against suggested they remove a Pepsi-Cola bottling plant from New York State if New York State put a tax in. Mayor Michael Nutter of Philadelphia, who tried to do it, said the beverage industry gets its victories the old-fashioned way. They pay for them. Come on. They paid a ton in the state to derail it in the state. They've already met with me twice. They're all over Richmond. They're not going to let this go easy. So there's a lot of corporate power opposing us in this, and that's at the heart of making it difficult. You know, Philip Morris was a formidable foe once upon a time, too.
Yeah. Okay. let's take our a commercial break here. Do we have enough? Well, we might have to spill some of the spots into the next hour, but take it away, Rick. We'll be right back.
On Highway 1 in Moss Landing, you will find the coolest biker shop in the West. J&S's Eagle Iron and Leather Shop is devoted to the American patriotic spirit.
It's located next to J&S Surplus and Outdoor Store, which is your camping, survival, patriotic, and military headquarters. On Saturday, September 1st, we invite you to our annual KIA ride-in, huge parking lot sale, military vehicle, and bike show with great food, big prizes, and a patriotic flag-raising ceremony at midday that remembers America's killed-in-action military heroes. Live entertainment with nationally recognized band Big Rain with Bruce Wynn and friends. Freedom.
Major sponsors are Eagle Emblems Incorporated, Kirby Kirby and Kirby Motorcycle Attorneys, A Tool Shed Equipment Rentals, Good Times Weekly, FueledByTheFallen.org, Abrego Print, Pirate Graphics, Casual Clothing, Monterey Bay News and Views, and of course, JSCO.
Meet Fueled by the Fallen founder and movie star Kevin Major Howard from Full Metal Jacket. Witness the 9/11 Angels, a magnificent mobile memorial. J&S Surplus on the corner of Highway 1 and Struve Road. More information at KIAHonorFlag.org or just look for the flags.
Discover the difference at The Garden Company. The difference in the way you're greeted. The difference in the quality and diversity of our plants. The difference in the knowledge of our staff and their commitment to your positive shopping experience. Hi, I'm Charlie Cutman of The Garden Company Nursery and Gift Shop, a family-owned garden center since 1986. Let us help you create colorful containers for your deck, a fragrant planting for your entry, or an edible landscape for your personal harvest. You'll find everything you need. Perennials, shrubs, vines, fruit trees, organic vegetables, earth-friendly products, pottery, soils, and much more. And there's our incredible gift shop with exquisite gift ideas for office parties, hostess gifts, Mother's Day, or any occasion. Discover why Good Times readers voted The Garden Company Best Nursery and Garden Supply. The Garden Company Nursery and Gift Shop, a proud member of Think Local First, 2218 Mission Street, across from Safeway on the west side of Santa Cruz. The Garden Company Nursery and Gift Shop, a family-owned garden center since 1986.
Robert Frost said, "Good fences make good neighbors." But I say, bamboo privacy hedges make really good neighbors. Hello, I'm Larry Gullman of Bamboo Giant on Freedom Boulevard in Aptos. Bamboo Giant features the best bamboo species for our local climate, which means we have the right bamboo for you. Listen to what customers have to say.
I'm Steve Schneider. I live in Monterra, south of San Francisco. I was looking for a screen because I've got some houses that are looking right down in our backyard. I checked out lots of bamboo options around the Bay Area, and Bamboo Giant had the best customer service. They had the best track record. They paid attention to detail. They give you a guarantee with the plant. I found my privacy. I just can't say enough good things about them.
Visit Bamboo Giant and walk our 30 acres of naturally growing bamboo groves. You will be truly amazed at the diversity, and you will see just how easy it can be to use bamboo to bring privacy to your home. Bamboo Giant is located at 5601 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos and on the web at bamboogiant.com.
Okay, welcome back to the closing minute of the KSCO Saturday special. Ben, will you be able to stay with us and take some calls? Okay, great. Wonderful. So we have Dr. Jeff Ritterman and pharmacist Ben Fuchs. We're talking about sugar, the prospect of a sugar tax in the city of Richmond. And if that happens as a result of a ballot measure coming up this November, I think that you're going to see this happen in other cities around the country and maybe statewide ballot initiatives and so forth. And I'm all for doing anything possible to raise the public awareness of the negative effects of sugar, which they're just too much of. For years, I've been hearing about Doc Wallach saying there used to be 1 pound a year of sugar consumed, and now it's, you know, umpteen jillion pounds. Anyhow, it's KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey. It's 11 a.m. here, CBS News.
In our nursing homes, will go out of business as a result of this. 4 million seniors are projected to lose their Medicare Advantage plans that they enjoy and they chose today under this Obamacare plan.
GOP VP hopeful Paul Ryan campaigning in Florida, assuring seniors there his and Mitt Romney's plans to reform Medicare will not affect anyone over 55. Who knew the Republican Party would be the savior of Medicare? President Obama's reaction.
You'd think they'd avoid talking about Medicare, given the fact that both of them have proposed to voucherize the Medicare system. But I guess they figure the best defense is to try to go on offense.
President making a couple of campaign appearances in New Hampshire today, says Romney wants to give seniors a voucher to buy their own insurance and characterizes his opponent's tax proposals as trickle-down fairy dust. Mitt Romney with a half dozen fundraisers today in Massachusetts. Attacking mosquitoes in Dallas, weather permitting.
The aircraft that went up Friday night did manage to spray for about an hour and a half.
And the rains came. KRLD reporter Dennis Martin, pesticide planes hope to get airborne again tonight. In between the thunderstorms, mosquitoes are carrying West Nile virus, responsible for 10 deaths in Texas and 200 people sickened there. In South Dakota, epidemiologist Lon Keitlinger.
In the past 2 weeks or so, we've tripled and quadrupled our number of human West Nile cases. We're having our biggest year in 5 years here in South Dakota. We have 67 cases, and that's a lot here. We've also had one death.
Call it climate change, call it whatever.
After one of the coldest, wettest springs and summers on record, it's hot in Britain, temperatures in the 90s.
There is a lot of warm weather today. People, I'm sure, in droves will be flocking to the seaside and getting out their barbecues.
The beaches are crowded, and suddenly the Mr. Softy ice cream van has customers. It'll be toasty for the next couple of days, but we're warned, don't get used to it.
To next week, things will get cooler and fresher still, so enjoy the heat while it lasts.
Just as well, since few houses have air conditioning. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
Veracruz, Mexico is going to get very wet.
We're expecting rainfall amounts of 3 to 6 inches across portions of northeastern Mexico, with maximum amounts of up to 8 inches possible. And that could cause some flash flooding and mudslide problems, especially in the mountainous terrain areas there.
Senior hurricane specialist Michael Brennan, National Hurricane Center, where they're keeping one eye on the remnants of Tropical Depression Helene, the other on Hurricane Gordon, moving eastward in the Atlantic Ocean. The recession is hitting everyone. Tonight show host Jay Leno taking a significant reduction in pay. It's being reported roughly 24 staffers being let go as part of a major budget restructuring at the late night talk show. This is CBS News.
Guys, if you haven't tried Entramax, the natural male enhancement supplement for on-demand performance in the bedroom, here's your chance to see what everyone is talking about. In celebration of 10 million doses, we're giving away 1 million bottles. Entramax was developed and perfected by specialists with over 40 years experience in creating natural products that target pharmaceutical results without the side effects. Entramax works the first time, every time, for explosive, fast-action results in the bedroom. This is the product that drug companies don't want you to know about, but we do. That's why we're giving away 1 million bottles. Try Entramax for a few weeks and we'll deliver the best sex of your life, guaranteed. Take your performance to the next level. Call now to see how you can get a free bottle of doctor-recommended Entramax. This is a limited-time offer, so call 800-644-1262. That's 800-644-1262. Guys, when she's ready, be ready with Entramax. Call 800-644-1262. That's 800-644-1262.
11:04 on this Saturday morning, August the 18th. This is KSCO. I'm Rick O'Shea with a King of the Hill traffic update. Very slow traffic, Highway 17 southbound from Los Gatos through from Campbell into Los Gatos. Stop and go pace through there, picking up further south closer to Santa Cruz. 17 and Highway 1 is still moving pretty good. It is slow on the west side. Ocean Street area is a major arteries leading to the beaches are definitely slow this morning. Highway 1 still moving at a pretty good clip through Santa Cruz. No real slowdowns to report northbound or southbound further away from the Fishhook. KSCO weather today, mostly sunny skies. Highs will be in the upper 70s and 80s at the coast, upper 80s and low 90s inland. 64 outside KSCO studios here in Santa Cruz. Before hour two of the Saturday special, here's the latest from Kay's Whirling.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
My friend Marcia sent it to me, and it was written by Anonymous. I do not know what to make of it, because the writer talently is able to touch deeply into the emotions which are so easily stimulated, the kind of emotions we all can understand and feel now and then. This is too good to discard, so why shouldn't you explore it for yourself and see what you think? It's called Just in Case I'm Gone Tomorrow. Here it is. One day, a woman's husband died, and on that clear, cold morning, in the warmth of their bedroom, the wife was struck with the pain of learning that sometimes it's not anymore. No more hugs, no more special moments to celebrate together, no more phone calls just to chat, no more just a minute. Sometimes what we care about the most gets all used up and goes away, never to return before we say goodbye or say, I love you. So while we have it, it's best we love it, care for it, fix it when it's broken, and heal it when it's sick. This is true for marriage, old cars, children with bad report cards, dogs with bad hips, aging parents and grandparents. We keep them because they are worth it. A best friend who moved away, or a sister-in-law after divorce. These make us happy, no matter what. Life is important, like people we know who are special, and so we keep them close. Suppose one morning you never wake up. Do all your friends know you love them? The important thing is to let every one of your friends know you love them, even if you think they do not love you back. And just in case I'm gone tomorrow, please do not vote for that foolish, incompetent Barack Hussein Obama. For KSCO, this is Kay's Whirling.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Should I tell him? Should I tell him what the last sentence of the commentary used to be before Billy insisted that it be changed?
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
All right, welcome to hour number two. It's funny, people always say, welcome back to hour number two. It's not welcome back to hour number two. It's welcome to hour number two. I gotta have a staff meeting with all our hosts and say, don't say welcome back anymore, unless it really is welcome back after a commercial break or something. It's MZ welcoming you to hour number two of the KSCO Saturday Special with my friends, pharmacist Ben Fuchs and Dr. Jeff Ritterman. Jeff is a city council member in the city of Richmond, a neighbor of mine at KSCO North, and pharmacist Ben works with me in the longevity nutritional company, and that's how he and I have become acquainted. Been so for many years, right, Ben? How many has it been now? Golly, going 13, 14 years now, right?
Yeah, 97, 98. Long time. I was a young man. I had long dark hair.
and you have been over the years the main fill-in host for our nationally syndicated Dead Doctors Don't Lie talk radio program that goes out to a bunch of radio stations across the country, you know, and produced from KSCO here in our bomb shelter, and of course increasingly on the internet. Now you have your own show Brightside Bend, which airs on our sister station, AM 1340 KOMY, weekdays from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., or on demand at gcnlive.com. We're putting together our own infrastructure so that Brightside Bend will be available on demand at ksco.com and through our yet-to-be-created iPhone and Android apps for your favorite radio station. But lots of exciting things ahead using technology, and we're really pleased here to be talking about attacks that, and people have been saying, they've been emailing me, MZ, have you lost your senses? I mean, you're supporting a tax, any tax at all? I mean, yeah, I support some taxes. I support taxes that are put to the vote of the people. In fact, I support just about anything that's put to a vote of the people. And this tax makes an awful lot of sense to me, the tax on sugar. But let's use this hour primarily for phone calls to talk about that which is proposed. Again, our guest is Dr. Jeff Ritterman and pharmacist Ben Fuchs. So first caller who's been waiting for some time here. Oh, by the way, give us a call at 479-1080, and that's in area 831. If you're listening to us from distant parts of the world, we're in the United States, and our area code within the United States is 831. If you're in the 831 area code, just dial the 7-digit phone number, which is 479-1080. If you want to participate via email, my email address is mz@ksco.com. I got to lock Ben in here so we don't lose him. Rory in Watsonville, welcome to the Saturday Special. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hey, I applaud the effort on a local basis, if that's what a community like Richmond wants to do, and make sodas, sweet and sodas, more expensive. I understand, and I've learned a lot over the years from Dr. Wallach and Ben Fuchs and others on nutrition, and we were going this route anyway. We don't drink sodas as a family. We don't have chubby kids as a rule. We've stayed away from the hydrogenated oils and try to up our supplements and all that good stuff. So
chubby kids are not permitted in your household.
I just saw a rather chunky individual driving into a ranch, sitting in a car, taking a big slug of us from a soda can. I thought, oh my gosh, if that isn't the picture of the problem. The question I guess I wanted to ask was, number one, if it's as bad as it is, and we know it's bad, why don't we just ban, by municipality, just outright ban sodas? Just get rid of them. Just say, hey, we're not permitted in our community, we want to be healthy. And number two, a larger question, and I know it's a more daunting challenge, why don't we go after the source of this cheap corn, high fructose, corn syrupy thing that's found its way into so many foods by eliminating the government subsidy for corn and cutting the research budgets at these land-grant universities? The money just pours into these places. It's unbelievable, and there's a ton of money coming from the feds that keep this poor nutrition bandwagon going. So I was just curious what your guess thought about going to the root of the problem, which is cheap corn syrup, and they're looking for ways to utilize it.
What do you think, Jeff?
Well, let's start with the second question first. I think he's exactly right. And, my 90-year-old mother, when I told her I was doing this and I was starting to get national press, said, yeah, but the problem is really those corn subsidies, just exactly what this gentleman's saying. In fact, we have to totally change industrial agriculture. It's corn subsidies, it's antibiotics. There's a whole problem here, and industrial agriculture is the leading cause of water pollution in the waterways of the U.S. right now. So that's a huge mistake, and imagine if those subsidies were going to your local farmers to farm what you needed here locally and to do it in as nutritious and in as organic a way as you could, that would make real sense, and it would rebuild local economies. And that's urban ag is actually an important part of our conception of how to rebuild the local economy in Richmond. So I'm 100% with you, and that's exactly the kind of thinking. You really need to get to the root of the problem, and as a municipality, we can't really do that. The second part of the first part of the question was banning. Prohibition is not really a good thing. People hate it. It didn't work for alcohol. It doesn't work for marijuana or other drugs. It just sort of turns people into criminals, and I think it will have a negative effect in the long run. I think it's much better to kind of use a smaller stick, not a big club. But
And I'm all for education. I mean, that's really, to me, that's how you get people to make the choice for themselves anyway, is to bring that education, whether it's to a family, a school, or whatever, and just people, the soda manufacturers or producers just...
Rory, let Ben Fuchs weigh in on this. Ben, you're there.
Yeah, a couple of really interesting points this gentleman brought up. First of all, let's talk about corn for a second. Why do you think everybody likes corn so much? You know, you ever meet anybody who didn't like corn, or find a kid who didn't like corn on the cob? Why do you think corn is the number one, I think it's the number one or number two grain? Soy is probably the number one grain. Soy is not really a grain, but soy is the number one cash crop. I think corn is the second cash crop, the second highest grossing cash crop in this country. Why do you think it's so popular? Well, it's because of the sugar. You know,
yeah, sweet
sugar, it's incredibly sweet, and it's genetically modified to be sweet. So corn is a serious, serious problem, and we get a lot of calories from corn. If you include the corn that's fed to animals, we get even more calories from corn. So aside from the sugar, you get the imbalance of omega-6s to omega-3s. Corn is not a great source of protein and amino acids. It's a very, very problematic crop. And then the question has to become, why are we subsidizing it? Why are we spending so much government dollars, tax dollars, to subsidize the corn industry? Well, has anybody ever asked that question? I commend our caller for bringing that up. That's a huge, huge question.
Yeah, Rory, you're
to
be condemned. I mean, commended. Yeah. So anyhow,
Rory, want
to thank you, Rory. We got other calls to get to. Okay, appreciate your call to the Saturday special at 479-1080 in area 831. Our next caller will be, you know, everybody on the board is a guy. Where are the women folk? I want some calls from the women folk to 479-1080. Don't women folk care about sugar? Don't they want to weigh in on this controversy? Go ahead, Ben.
Let me just throw one thing. For folks who are addicted to sugar, there's a couple action steps that you can take, and this is also true for people who are diabetic or pre-diabetic, and, you know, some 30% of Americans fall into that category. One of the simplest things you could do to protect yourself from the ravages of sugar and to help stabilize a little bit, at least, your insulin is to drink more water, especially after you eat a sugary meal, especially after you eat a dessert kind of food, and super especially first thing in the morning when your blood volume, your blood tends to be concentrated. So simply by drinking more water, you can do a lot to protect yourself from sugar. And then secondly, you will find that the more protein that you're eating, and I'm not talking about steaks, I'm talking about high-quality protein, not cooked protein.
Whey protein.
More whey protein, absolutely. The more protein you eat, the less you are going to crave sugar. And then thirdly, if you are going to eat sugar, please make sure that you're getting the B vitamins, you're getting a lot of thiamine, you're getting a lot of niacin, you're getting your magnesium, you're getting your chromium, you're getting your vanadium, and you're getting your nutrients that can at least help you process the sugar. So if you're going to be going for the sugar, at least take some of the do some of the things that you can do to help protect yourself from it.
Great. Yeah, thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. Okay, 479-1080 is the phone number if you want to weigh in on our discussion today, or mz@ksco.com. Oh, I really should open my email box, shouldn't I? Jim and Salinas, you're next on the KSCO Saturday Special with Jeff Ritterman and Ben Fuchs and MZ.
Hello, everybody.
Hey there, Jim.
I'm just wondering if this tax is successful and it dramatically reduces the drinking of sweetened drinks, where are you going to get the continued revenue for the programs that are sponsored by the tax?
Well, you know, I'm a doctor, and I always felt that my job was to put myself out of a job. Because in the end, you want a healthy community and you don't want people to be coming in with heart attacks. It's the same sort of thing with cigarette taxes. The money that goes into cigarette taxes goes into education to cause decreased smokers. If it happened overnight that everybody in Richmond stopped drinking sugar-sweetened beverages and we got no income from it, I'd consider that a success, and we'd work on other things and other ways to raise the money. I don't think that's going to happen overnight, but I think you point out, you know, exactly the situation that as we're more and more successful, the revenue should be less and less, and we just have to live with that.
Okay, I was just wondering, could ice cream and sugar sweetened cereals be an alternative to source for the revenue for these programs?
Well, we're sort of taking it one step at a time and seeing where we can go. I think in a sense, this is the low hanging fruit because it's got the best data scientifically showing its problems. It's the easiest thing to remove from the diet. It's got a simple substitute like water. I don't know where we might consider going next and what we would think the next best thing to do to reverse the obesity epidemic, which is really a metabolic disease epidemic.
How about simple carbohydrates like you find in pizza, white bread, and maybe birthday cakes?
Well, I think you're exactly right that they are nutritionally a real problem because of the insulin resistance problem we talked about earlier. It's a political question what you tax and what you're able to do, you know, real public education around. But I totally agree with you in terms of the nutrition and it fits into that whole discussion of evolutionary biology we were talking about before. I mean, white flour is pretty new on the scene. And it's not as bad as liquid sugar, but it's pretty close. Gets converted very quickly without much digestion and ups your blood glucose, and that's a concern.
Okay. All right. Well, of course, thank you very much.
Jim, want to thank you for your call to the Saturday special. There goes Jim in Salinas. Here is an email from Richard Bartell via our website here. You are drinking the Kool-Aid. This is another tax to save our schools. This is exactly the message Brown is promoting for the next election. The correct question to ask is, why do we need more money for schools? Have you ever seen a breakdown of where the money goes? Start with the amount of money given to a school for each student. Multiply that amount by the average number of students in a classroom. Subtract the average teacher's salary. Where does the rest go? It is a very large amount of money. Thank you, Richard Bartell, for your email to mz@ksco.com. There are other emails, but the board is fast loading up here. Let's go to David in San Francisco. David, welcome to the Saturday special.
Hey, morning, Michael. You know, I didn't... is this part of the food chain, or are you just doing the overall general topics?
No. Well, this is a... I thought this would be a great topic for the Saturday special, and I heard my neighbor, Jeff, on KCBS when I was driving down to KSCO Central here recently, and saw him on Fox News Channel and decided... Actually, I decided a long time ago that I had wanted to have Jeff on, so here he is.
All right. Well, the reason I ask, I don't know if you're keeping up with some of the news about, you know, these genetically modified diseases that are happening. You know, they're ending up with swine flu and bird flu and all of these other things. And basically, a lot of people don't realize the difficulty it is for a bird flu to spread and then create a disease in humans. But basically, a disease that'll hit a hummingbird, a robin wouldn't catch it, or an eagle wouldn't catch something that a wren would have. There's differences among birds, so that a flu can't spread from bird to bird, different species of bird to each. So the idea that then you would have a bird disease being caught by a mammal, which would then have the same difficulty in spreading among mammals, so that something that a gerbil would have, you know, a cat might not catch. So the idea of there's like six layers of separation, if I remember right, of the bird flu, and it's very difficult to imagine that it could have even been created other than by a laboratory or by hazardous waste. And so the idea that we're allowing corporations to sell us things, junk food, which don't pass Food and Drug Administration, and then are being sold on corporate TV as the newest, cleanest thing for little kids to grow, strong bodies 12 ways. And they're not.
David, you're going on, and I might be really dumb, but I'm not getting the connection here. I wish you would, together here for us, because we've got a lot of other callers.
Just looking at the very idea of whether or not things which are being sold on the open market as food are giving us diseases. And then, closing down the health department with budget cuts is not helping the solution.
I gotcha. Okay. All right. What do you think about the tax?
Ostensibly, if we're going to need to inspect these things, then maybe those taxes should be paying for health department inspections of whether or not a thing is truly a food, how we're getting these diseases, the origins of them. In other words, you would have a Sherlock Holmes trace back a thing. Well, if we're ending up with...
We got to move on. Sorry, David. Thank you for your call. Justin in Santa Cruz, you're on the air.
Hey, MZ and Brightside Ben. How you guys doing?
Hey, Doc.
Good. Hey, I just wanted to point out a fact. I work in the food service industry right now. I'm going to cater an event today, and a little trick that the chefs always use to make this food more palatable for the customers is they add an extra little bit of salt. Because we naturally crave salt, we naturally crave sugar, and I think the producers of these big food companies know it. And to sell more product, they add a little extra of one or the other to their product to make it more palatable. So we naturally need it because in the olden days when, cavemen were out being hunter-gatherers, we found sweet stuff, and it was an energy source for the body. They know that we need it for energy. And we naturally crave it. Unfortunately, there's not really a really healthy way to get it except for maybe natural bees honey. And we're totally contaminated with it. I had a question for Brightside Ben. I'm an insulin-dependent diabetic.
And by the way, for those of you who don't recognize Justin's voice, it was two or three Saturday specials ago. He was our special guest. Justin is Justin Baker is a 30-year-old a warrior for this country. He was an Army Ranger, and during the course of his service to our country to protect you and me, he came down with very serious type 1 diabetes and was given an honorable discharge on disability from the Army, and has experienced all kinds of problems with the VA that you're still fighting. Am I right, Justin?
Yep, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead with your question to Ben.
Question to Ben. Ben, how does sugar change the body's pH? Because I have pH problems. Every time I get sick and I go into the hospital, my pH is way out of whack, and my body is more acidic than it should be.
Well, you're not handling sugar, and that's probably why. But acid is created when the body's metabolism is revved up, and sugar revs up the body's metabolism. Acid is a sign that there's excess metabolism and not enough drainage and detoxification. So, long story short, the sugar will rev up your metabolism and it will raise your pH. That's one of the reasons why you want to drink more water, by the way, to help dilute some of that acidity. So lots of things you could do, by the way, for type 1 diabetes, and it's an autoimmune disease. You're sure it's type 1 diabetes, they told you that, right?
Oh, yeah, I've been on insulin for 7 years.
Okay, so, yeah, there's lots you could do for type 1 diabetes, and it sounds like you know what you're talking about, though. And have you explored some of these alternatives to at least ways to support insulin and maybe lower your insulin dose? Zinc, for example,
is
very important. Yeah, all that.
I've called you twice. Once, when I first got into the longevity business, I'm an InfoWarrior. I'm on the InfoWarrior team under MZ there, and I cut my insulin dosage in half in 6 weeks on the longevity product line, and so
good
now
deal,
I'm
buddy.
Down from 70 down to about 35 units a day, and
awesome.
I called you recently, and you told me to get on taurine, arginine, and glucosamine.
Alpha lipoic acid. Get some alpha lipoic acid, too.
Okay.
Just Yeah, probiotics stabilize your digestive system. That's awesome about the insulin. Type 1 diabetics should recognize that they're jacking their body up with insulin every bit as much as a type 2 diabetic with insulin resistance is. And all the problems associated with insulin are going to be affect type 1 diabetes who are shooting insulin up just as much as type 2 diabetics who are dealing with the resistance problem. So insulin is not some benign biochemical that you can just inject willy-nilly. There's a price to be paid for shooting yourself up with insulin as well as for insulin resistance.
All righty, Justin, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. That opens up a line at 479-1080. That's in area 831. Oh, Jeff, you wanted to say something. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I don't remember, actually.
Oh, okay.
MZ, I want to say one last thing, too.
Yeah.
One more thing. Insulin, dropping your insulin is a great way to improve your longevity as well. For people who are older or people who are interested in getting older, keeping your insulin low and caloric restriction in general, which partially works by lowering insulin, is another great strategy for longevity. So the less you eat, the longer you live, and the less your insulin is the lower your insulin is, the longer you live as well.
Okay. Thank you, Pharmacist Ben. It's 11:30 on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO, the Saturday special with Jeff Ritterman, Pharmacist Ben Fuchs, MZ, and you, the callers, to 479-1080 in area 831, or you, the emailers, to mz@ksco.com. Well, I'll be. It looks like we have our first female caller of the day. Would that be Dee in Aptos? Dee?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Dee. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having the show.
Yeah.
I'd like to start out by saying I do not trust the government to decide what is good for me in terms of health. I feel that the big corporations are really running the decisions via lobbyists, via people who are moving in and out of the government like the FDA and Monsanto. I feel it's a very slippery slope. And I feel that in terms of restricting salt, sugar, I think the best way to do it is through education, because the natural form of salt, like sea salt, has minerals in it. And as Ben had said, so does sugar if you take the natural form. If they're going to ban anything or if you're going to tax something, why not tax the aspartame drinks? Because the aspartame is more dangerous to the body than actual sugar, but also I have an objection to the corn syrup. I believe it was something like 1986 when it was introduced into the soda drinks, and I think if you look at the charts of how people have gotten heavy, I think it really started back in 1980s. Well, it might be, I think I'm mixing my dates, but they were about the same time.
Okay, well, Jeff, you probably have a response, so.
A Japanese chemist figured out how to make high fructose corn syrup. It's not just something you can extract from corn, and that's true that once that was made, it was figured out how to make it very, very cheaply, and that made it sought after by all kinds of food and beverage manufacturers and put in everything. However, biologically, sucrose and high fructose corn syrup are essentially identical. The sucrose molecule, what you get from cane or beet sugar and you put in that white stuff people put in their coffee, I don't, but some people do, that's 50% glucose, 50% fructose. High fructose corn syrup, the most common variety used in the United States, is 45% glucose, 55% fructose. So those are essentially the same for the body. It is true, however, that since high fructose corn syrup is so cheap, it just has flooded the market. But biologically, metabolically, they are both a problem, and they are handled the same for the body. In terms of taxing and education, education alone was a total failure in getting people to stop cigarette smoking and to stop new people from taking up the habit. And when cigarette taxes were added, there was a huge improvement. And that's been the case in every public health campaign in the United States, whether it be seatbelts, drunken driving, wearing helmets, whatever it is. People need a little bit of a stick to begin to get their attention. So that's why to do it. And on top of it, we can fund things which in and of themselves will decrease childhood obesity in our city.
Yeah, Dee, think about it. You speak favorably of education. Education has its costs associated with it. And how do you fund the education? What a great way, I think. Sounds great to me.
That brings up a whole other topic, and I won't even go there. But
okay.
But what about, are they taxing the aspartame drinks?
Oh, no. And we're not taxing the aspartame drinks.
Now, there are those, I've received a number of emails, Jeff, saying, hey, aspartame is worse than sugar. Now, I don't know whether it is or not.
Here's the deal. You know what?
Yeah, what do you think, Ben?
Let me just say something about it, because it's about the tax. Yeah. It's two questions about the science and the tax. We are responding to a childhood obesity epidemic in Richmond. That's what the tax is in response to. A third of our African American and a third of our Latino 5th and 7th graders are now obese, and another 20% are overweight. They are not obese and overweight from drinking diet sodas. They are obese and overweight from drinking sugar-sweetened beverages. The average child in Richmond drinks 2 to 2.5 cans a day, which is 40 pounds of sugar from sugar-sweetened beverages a year, period. So that is the cause, that is the culprit.
May I add something here?
Sure.
It's my understanding that aspartame makes you hungry and makes you want to eat more calories. And honestly, I've never seen a thin person who drinks diet sodas.
I think you have a point there, but it's not really in reference to our children in Richmond. That's a different whole demographic, a different whole age group. It's an important question, but it's not really addressing childhood obesity in Richmond.
Okay, and does Ben have a comment?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, first of all, the doctor's absolutely correct, and you guys are entitled to tax whatever you want to tax. But he's raising a couple interesting points. Number one, where do you stop taxing? Do you tax everything that is created by
as long as it's on the ballot for the people? That's what people don't seem to be understanding here. I'm not in favor of any government body, levying a tax on its serfs. But I'm very much in favor of a government body levying a well-thought-out tax to fund programs that are needed for education.
And you can tax a lot of things. You could tax candy bars. You could tax French fries. You could tax hamburgers.
The reason you can't, and the reason it's different, is because solid foods and liquid sugar are handled differently in the body.
And you don't have
the scientific data to back you up. You just don't.
How about milkshakes? They're way worse for you.
Milkshakes will be taxed.
Okay, milkshakes will be taxed. All right.
So will chocolate milk. So will strawberry milk.
How about orange juice?
I went through the fruit juice discussion before. We are not recommending fruit juices, but we did not include fruit juices for two reasons. One, the data is really clear on sugar-sweetened beverages, and it mostly doesn't include juices. And two, I don't think that's politically acceptable at this point. But when I was a kid and you drank orange juice in the morning, you had a tiny little orange juice glass. That was your dose. You didn't drink 12 ounces.
Your points are all well taken, but the question is, or the point I'm making is that it's a slippery slope on who draws the line on whether orange juice is as bad as Diet Coke, or whether the literature is as clear on Diet Coke as it is on milkshakes. There's a slippery slope once you start to tax everything that's bad for you, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you guys in Richmond what to do. It's none of my business. But another point that Dee brought up is very important is that while I said earlier sugar is not a poison, aspartame is a poison. It is essentially a drug. It's made by a drug company, Searle. It was discovered as a part of pharmaceutical research. And if you want to tax something and you want to control the ingestion of something, you certainly would do worse than to consider taxation or at least regulation on aspartame, and I doubt that is going to happen.
What about sucralose, Ben?
You know, I haven't seen anything. I haven't really seen any negative literature. There's a little bit. I haven't seen a lot of negative literature on sucralose, but from a chemical and organic chemistry perspective, you're putting more chlorine in your body. It's a chlorinated sugar. And that's probably going to be processed like a drug as well, like a poison as well. See, MZ, this is very important, and for everybody else, the listeners to understand as well, I'm sure the doctor knows this, the body has a poison metabolizing system dedicated to poison. Sugar is not a poison in that sense. Sugar is metabolized by biochemistry that is dedicated to sugar. But the poison control system is what's breaking down and metabolizing things like aspartame, and what that does is it depletes the energy of that poison control system, and now the poison control system is more vulnerable to cancers, it's more vulnerable to other bacteria, it's more vulnerable to breakdown and degenerative disease. So when it comes to regulations, if you're going to regulate anything, I would say a case could be made for regulating artificial sweeteners like aspartame and anything that has to be handled by the body's poison control system.
Well, we didn't get into this with the position that we have to regulate something. We got into this because our data from the fitness gram, which is done in California every year, gives you the height and the weight of your fifth and seventh graders, alarmed us because of the huge problems with obesity. So the tax was driven by looking for a solution to the obesity problem, and Thomas Frieden, who's the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, basically the country's top doctor for prevention, had already said that the 1 cent per ounce sugar sweetened beverage tax could be the most single most effective measure to reverse the obesity epidemic. And there had already been a paper published in the New England Journal of Medicine that he and Kelly Brownell had co-authored. So there's a huge literature suggesting, not huge, but they weren't the only ones, suggesting this was the way to go. So we didn't start with, okay, let's look at all the beverages and which ones have the biggest problems with health. Okay, these artificial sweeteners should come under particular scrutiny. We started with, we've got to do something for these kids right away. What's the best thing to do? And that seemed to be the best advice, and I think it is.
Okay, we got to move on to other people. I want to thank Dee and Aptos for her call. Thank you, Dee. And let's see, who's been waiting the longest? Michael in San Jose, and then we got Alexa and Son and Bruce and Soquel. Go ahead, Michael, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm in disagreement with the tax. I don't think that it stops people's behaviors. You know, I'm an investor. I'm sure the doctor's not going to want to hear this. I'm an investor in tobacco. And, you know, every time a tax is implemented, the stocks go up, whether it's a tax in Europe or another country or here. The stocks go up every single time. They say it's a correlation where the people buy up a lot of the product before the tax takes effect, and then afterwards the people just don't care. You know, I mean, if someone pays $5 for a pack of cigarettes, what else will they pay for it? Think about that.
Well,
you know, if someone, you know.
Well, the data contradicts you. The data is really strong. Cigarette taxes have drastically decreased the number of smokers and have drastically decreased the number of new smokers, kids who take it up. So that's out there. What happens to your tobacco stock, I don't know, and that's your own moral problem, owning stock in something that makes people sick. I think you ought to reconsider that. But in terms of that, people will not decrease their consumption if there's a soda tax. Every study that's been done has showed that it will. That's why the beverage industry is fighting us so hard. If consumption doesn't go down, they don't really give a darn. I mean, they care because consumption goes down. They are fighting for your total liquid intake. If you drink more water, you drink less soda, that's a loss for them. They applauded in the one of the major things when they started selling more soda than milk some years ago. You could look up Todd Putnam, who was the advertising guy who's now come out and talking about it. So your data's wrong. When taxes go in, consumption does go down.
Like I said, I haven't, you know, you can also look at the state of California makes more money off a carton of cigarettes than Philip Morris does, okay? And so what happens is that the people who become addicted to sugar, the taxes on these things like sugar like you want to do, or tobacco, is the people who become addicted are your state legislators. Because let me tell you, what happens now is the tobacco companies go to these guys if they start to get too strict with them and say, we're just going to stop sending you cigarettes, okay? So what's going to happen? Are they going to stop sending us Coca-Cola? I mean, imagine if Coca-Cola says, we're not going to send Richmond any soft drinks. You know,
here's the problem.
That might be
you have a product that has no nutritional value, that takes years off your kids' lives, that people don't understand the biochemistry on. It causes tooth decay, heart attacks, diabetes, cancer, all the things that are killing us now. That's what you have. You have that product. You have to go from the present economy, which is based on that product, to a new economy where that product is being sold in much less quantity. That's the goal for society. Being able to make that with a smooth glide path and an easy touchdown is great. That's what we have to do. But the argument that you're making crap and you have to keep selling crap because that makes the economy go, even though it makes our kids sick, is not an economic argument.
It's a tax argument because your tax collectors are going to become addicted to those things.
Oh my God!
Oh, I think that's ridiculous.
I'll be happy in Richmond.
We'll be happy in Richmond the day when we collect nothing on this and nobody in Richmond buys a sugar sweetened beverage. I'll consider that a victory.
But there's never been a tax. That's not how taxation.
This is a local tax. I'm on the city council.
Have you ever heard of it?
Has nothing to do with the state.
People are very suspicious of government authorities that say that they're going to take the tax back when it's not needed anymore. That's never happened before.
I'm not saying we would take the tax back. I'm saying if nobody buys any, we don't collect any.
Okay, we got so many other callers and emailers, and we got to do the commercial break too. Michael in San Jose, thank you so much. We just got to get to Alexa in Santa Cruz. Alexa, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question for both of the gentlemen.
Yes.
That are great show, by the way. Which of the two is worse? Raw wild honey or Splenda? And I'd like an answer.
Well, clearly raw wild honey is loaded with nutrients, but as the doctor said earlier, it's also loaded with fructose. So I wouldn't be eating a lot of honey of any kind, but if you had to make a choice, clearly you couldn't say Splenda is better for you than honey. I'm sure the doctor would agree with that.
You want to weigh in on that, Jeff?
You know, I don't know anything. I don't even know what's in Splenda. But if I had to choose, I would go with a modest dose of the honey. There is one artificial, I guess, natural sweetener on
stevia.
The market.
Yeah, stevia?
Stevia, which, you know, I'm not an expert on any of these. I'd be interested in what the pharmacist says. But, I know that there is a sustained use of the product somewhere in South America for a long time, and I also know that they've used it in Japan for a long time.
You raised some interesting points. By the way, Splenda is sucralose. It's the brand name for sucralose that we were talking about earlier. But, stevia is very interesting, and I'll tell you why. You don't need to have glucose or fructose to activate the taste receptors that are involved with sweetness on the tongue. There are also chemical structures that are found in a lot of plants called glycosides that have nothing to do with that standard fructose glucose structure that will have a sort of sweet taste, that will stimulate the sweet taste. The problem with stevia is
It doesn't exactly stimulate the sweet taste, so you get a kind of side bitter note with it, and it isn't anywhere near as it doesn't provide you the same kind of sugar taste that artificial sweeteners do. You can't really compare the two. But there's a lot of sweeteners that you can use that have some interesting benefits, most especially something called xylitol, which is a class of sugars called sugar alcohols. And xylitol is not only sweet like sugar. You can't tell the difference between xylitol and sugar if you were to taste it. You could bake with it. You could use it just like sugar. But xylitol is actually anti-caries. It helps stabilize calcium metabolism in the body, so it has some beneficial effects for osteoporosis as well as for actually for hardening teeth. And also, xylitol has wonderful antibacterial properties, so much so that you can make a xylitol solution.
I love xylitol.
It's wonderful stuff. So
yes,
there are alternatives, but more fundamentally, what we're trying to do is wean ourselves away from that sweet taste. That's what you want to get away from, the need to have that much sweet. Because when you need to have that much sweet, that's a manifestation of the fact that you're eating too much sweet.
Yeah.
And too much sweet has a lot of negative implications for health, negative ramifications for health above and beyond the insulin problem that we haven't talked about. But what you want to be able to do is get back to the point where sweetness, that sweet taste, is something that you're using rarely, or at least occasionally, and not frequently, whether it's xylitol or honey or anything else.
Alexa, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. Here's Sun in Santa Cruz. Sun, you're on the air.
Hey, hi.
Hey, Sun.
How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Hey, Sun.
Hey. So, hi. I have a couple questions quickly, which is, how much is this tax that you're proposing?
A penny an ounce.
A penny an ounce. So that's like 15 cents for a typical can, 16 cents? Right?
For a 16-ounce can, yeah.
Okay, so 15 cents, so we're talking about maybe 50 cents a day for each of these kids that's drinking three a day, right?
Depends on how big a product they drink, and the percentage changes because the price, the bigger the amount, the cheaper the price, so a tax on top of that makes a higher percentage.
Who's paying the tax? It's a sales tax?
No, it's a business license fee. You pay it as the business on what your inventory sold last year, and it's up to you to pass it on to the consumer or not.
Okay, so these kids are paying 50 cents each more to the guy who's selling them the drinks, and the guy who's selling the drinks is paying the city council, and what are they getting for that?
What is who getting?
What is the city council going to do with that money that's coming
in? Well, for $86,000, we can teach every child in Richmond, every third grader in Richmond who wants to, how to swim. So we'll start an after-school swim program, so that'll be one thing.
At the plunge.
For $80,000, we can put...
Let me just ask...
For $80,000, we can put a nutrition, gardening, and cooking teacher in every school. So I'm working with the schools to come up with a program to do that. The kids in the soccer leagues, the kids on the track and field after school, all those want to help defray the costs of their uniforms and so on. So basically what we did is we did a survey in the community, asked the community what they want the money spent on. It fell into three pots: after school sports, better nutrition and nutrition classes and nutrition instruction in the schools, and help with health costs for those who can't afford it. So that's where we're going to put the money.
Okay, so why don't you just eliminate the middleman? Because what is so offensive about taxes is that you make it punitive for people who are doing something that should be their free will.
Who is the middleman?
I think the government is the middleman, and I
mean, who do you want us to eliminate? I don't know what the question is.
I think the question is, how can we make all the people who want to levy taxes be the ones who have to pay the taxes so that they don't exercise power over people who don't want that?
Nobody's exercising power over people who want that. This tax goes to the electorate in November. It only gets passed if a majority of people who live in the city of Richmond say, yes, we agree to pay the tax.
Yeah, but you're a guy who doesn't drink these sweet drinks, and so you're a guy who's never going to pay the tax, but you want the right to collect money from people who do something that you don't do. And so you're in the perfect position of everybody who wants to levy taxes. They want to, somebody who wants to pay for something themselves is in a different category than somebody who wants to make other people pay for what they want.
I only have one vote in the city of Richmond. I will vote for this tax. It will pass if a majority of people in the city of Richmond choose to levy the tax on ourselves in order to fund an anti-obesity program, which is recommended by the head of the Centers for Disease Control, the United Nations, the American Heart Association, the American Medical Association. Otherwise, our children will be stay obese and they will die young. That's why we're doing it.
We're going to have to continue this. Son, I've got other callers. I got a whole commercials for this hour.
Have you considered instead of actually directly paying the people who are spending the money on their drinks and giving them a direct reward instead? That's my question. I'm done. Thanks.
Okay.
I have no idea what your question was. I'm sorry. Okay. I can't
Dave
answer.
Dave Allen, real quick. Dave, make it 30 seconds or less.
Okay. Yeah, okay. What's going to stop people from going down across the street to the Oakland, Costco, Walmart, loading, stockpiling stuff, bringing it back home?
Nothing.
Great question.
Absolutely nothing, but our neighboring community, San Pablo, is putting it on the next election, so they will have it. And people who go to, like, Costco, our big sellers are Costco, Walmart, and Target.
Right.
A lot of people come from go to Costco and buy whatever they're going to buy. They're going to continue to buy their beverages. A lot of those people come from Berkeley, Oakland, wherever. That tax money is going to go to pay for Richmond kids to learn how to swim.
Thanks, Dave. Rich, Bruce, and Soquel, real quick.
Okay, real quick. Three things. First of all, I don't like the government or my employer being my mommy or daddy. I'm fundamentally opposed to trying to govern my behavior through punitive taxes or subsidies. I own a home. I don't like the home interest deduction. Second, MZ, being for voting is not the same as being for the tax. You can be all for voting and absolutely opposed to the tax. The other thing is, and other callers have made this point, in 5 years what will happen is this tax money will eventually go to hire another staffer, pay bigger car allowances, increase pensions, and then we get into the motherhood and apple pie situation where in 5 years, we're going to have to cut the swimming program and cut the nutritional teacher.
I really resent that. That's not how the city of Richmond works. It's never worked. You know nothing about our city if you claim that. That is not how we spend money, and you're absolutely wrong, and the money will be committed to our children. We love our children in Richmond, and we take care of them. We don't give ourselves raises instead of teaching them how to swim. That's an insult.
In 5 or 10 years, you won't be there, so you can't guarantee what's going to happen to that money.
Okay. Right, and your cynicism won't necessarily be true in 5 or 10 years either.
Okay, Ron, thank you. Ron and Carmel, quick.
Hi, very briefly, when do you go after Tony Tiger, Captain Crunch, honey, dessert wine, and all the other sweet things that we ingest?
Well, let me just say that there's a fundamental difference between solid food and liquid food. Solid food takes the time to digest. There is some nutrient in some of it, and it does not cause the level of the problem that the liquid sugar does, which is why we went after the liquid sugar. But the things you mentioned are not healthy things for our children or us to be eating, and we have to figure out a way to make healthy food choices.
We're going to have to.
That's where you go next.
We're going to have to continue this some other time. Oh, my God, what a topic. So, hey, pharmacist Ben, Dr. Jeff.
Let me say thank you ahead, to the Jeff. Doctor. Thank you so much, doctor. I love what you're doing. I don't agree with the whole idea of taxation, but you are bringing a lot of attention to something that needs to have the light shined on it.
Hey, Ben, we can't wait to have you here filling up an auditorium or two or six here coming September or October. Love to have you in the Bay Area, maybe in Richmond. I know of a great venue in Richmond here, you know, so,
I would welcome that. I would welcome that.
That'd be great. Thank you so much, Ben, and, continued success to you in the Bright Side, carried live, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 a.m. on KOMY AM 1340. And, let's see, we've got, we can take one more call from, Don and Salinas. Don, you're on the air. Quick,
yeah,
Don. Quick.
To your guy on the sugar. Yeah, this is nothing but a jobs program for otherwise unemployable douchebags.
Okay, now why don't you be kind? Is that a kind thing to say, calling people douchebags?
Well, it's not a kind thing to take money out of poor people's pockets and then say you're doing
after it's been voted on by the people?
Listen, nobody has to pay the tax. Everybody can drink tap water. It's a perfectly healthy alternative. We are not douchebags. We're going to teach every third grade children in Richmond how to swim. I think that's really offensive what you're saying. I understand you have a different political opinion, but you really need to find a way to respectfully express it. That's just awful.
Let me respectfully express it this way. It's none of your business what people put in their mouth.
I am not telling people what to put in their mouth. I am offering them a chance to tax themselves. People can vote yes or no. We are not telling people to do anything. We are asking people for their vote. If you don't want to vote for it, don't vote for it.
You're conning people into voting for something. That's what you're doing. You're a con artist.
Okay.
Well, that's very offensive also, and I think this is the end of our conversation. Thank you for calling.
So, and that's the end of the show. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Thank you for everybody. That's what KSCO is all about. Program will be rebroadcast tonight between the hours of 10 p.m. and midnight. And, we're gonna suspend the news and do the commercial break, but here's the that's all folks. Okay. That's it.
That's all, folks.
KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. It's 12 noon. Here's not the news, but the commercial break.
It's the oldest advice in the book. If it seems too good to be true, then it probably is. Now along comes Proposition 32, a ballot initiative deliberately written to seem like it will fix a broken system, when in fact, Prop 32 isn't at all what it seems.
It's really a deceptive proposition, stuffed with special exemptions for the oil companies, Wall Street, and those secret campaign super PACs who want to rig the system while the middle class pays the price.
We need real reform that brings real transparency and gets the secret money out of politics.
Leading reform groups like the League of Women Voters and Common Cause all oppose Prop 32.
Learn the truth about who's really behind Prop 32 at VoteNoOn32.org.
Because it's not what it seems.
Paid for by No on 32, sponsored by educators, firefighters, school employees, healthcare providers, police officers, and labor organizations opposed to special exemptions from campaign finance rules for corporate special interests. Major funding by California Teachers Association, Issues PAC, California Professional Firefighters Ballot Issues Committee, and IE PAC and SEIU Local 1000 committees.
ASCO, Santa Cruz.
States, but says he needs to keep raising money at a furious pace because President Obama broke all fundraising marks 4 years ago. Recall of a 250,000 GM and Isuzu SUVs. Here's WWJ reporter Jeff Gilbert.
There have been 28 reports of fires caused by water building up in the driver's door, causing corrosion and leading to a short circuit. No injuries reported. GM is notifying owners in cold weather states where this is more likely to happen, but they will also replace the power window switches for free for people who request that in other states.
He says it affects the 2006 and 2007 model years. As people in the Idaho towns of Pine and Featherville are being told to leave, wary residents are returning home from wildfire evacuation in Washington State. CBS's Stephen Kaufman and Clay Ellum.
Firefighters working the Taylor Bridge wildfire in central Washington are holding their breath as a red flag warning carrying the potential to produce additional spot fires remains in the forecast. Fire Information Officer Randy Shepard says preparation is key.
It's a matter of staying alert and vigilant and finding these things while they're small.
Several large helicopters are continuing the firefight. Stephen Kaufman, CBS News, Clay Ellum, Washington.
She came in like a lion. Helene.
Helene moved inland just south of Tampico, Mexico on Saturday morning. It's now weakened to a tropical depression with maximum winds of about 35 miles per hour. All the watches and warnings have been discontinued for the coast of Mexico. So the main threat now from Helene is going to be rainfall.
Senior hurricane specialist Michael Brennan, National Hurricane Center, where they're now keeping a watch on Hurricane Gordon out in the Atlantic. This is CBS News.
You see and hear ad after ad about owning gold, but they raise more questions than they answer. That's why American Bullion has created a comprehensive free gold guide packed with unbiased information about gold as an investment. Get the facts before you buy. Call American Bullion now for your free copy of the gold guide at 800-716-6878. That's 800-716-6878. Are you tired of stressing out about the economy and ready to take control of your retirement funds? American Bullion has a precise, tax-free, and hassle-free system to convert your existing IRA or former 401k into a gold IRA. That's why they're the leader in gold IRA rollovers. It's all spelled out in the free American Bullion Gold Guide that answers all of your questions in plain and simple English. Call for your free copy today at 800-716-6878. 800-716-6878. American Bullion. 800-716-6878.
4 minutes past the hour, this is AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Rick O'Shea with a King of the Hill traffic update in San Jose, northbound 101 at a standstill from just north of the 85 connection through the 280 exchange. Also southbound 17 from Campbell through Los Gatos, also very heavy. Highway 1 northbound and southbound really slow through Santa Cruz from Bay Porter, 41st Avenue northbound, and from Soquel South, Highway 1 is very slow today. A lot of beach traffic will and can be expected. A lot of people already at the oceans today. Temperatures will be in the upper 70s and 80s at the coast, some upper 80s and 90s inland. So expect a lot of traffic west side of Santa Cruz, beach traffic around not only Santa Cruz but also Monterey. 69 outside KSCO studios right here in Santa Cruz. It's approaching 5 minutes past the hour on KSCO. It's time for Perspectives.
Good afternoon. You've tuned in to the Perspectives Radio Show. My name is Donald Davidson. I am your host, and joining me in the studio as regular guest, special guest host, every second and third Saturday of the month is Dr. David Biles. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Biles. And our very special guest today is Steve Gagné. Did I pronounce that right? Probably not.
It's Gagné.
Gagné.
I believe. Is that correct? Oh, are we all alone? I told you this was the Twilight Zone.
Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, great to be here. Pleasure.
Great. So you want to pronounce the name again? This is the second week in a row we've